Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise with you. Live here on a Tuesday. We'll get to some college football coming up in a little bit. Wes Rucker is going to join us at 7:45 this morning. Chad Bishop, who covers Vanderbilt, he'll join us at 8 o'clock. And then also comedian Trey Crowder and Tennessee Volunteer fan will join us in the 9 o'clock hour of the show. I can't wait to hear what type of material he has for Rocky Top.
Yeah, he's a very funny dude. He's not for everybody, just like all comedians, not for everybody. But he's a Tennessee fan, and I've been a fan of his, so we started chatting on Twitter. I slid up into his DMs, and I said, "Hey, dude, you got any material on the Vols?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah." I said, "All right, let's see what happens then."
All right. So,
well, you know, we like to try things outside the box here on the show.
That's us.
We'll break it up a little bit. We're not just going to kill you to death for 4 hours of stupid takes. It's not what we do.
No, just
stupid
like
sports.
Just like 3 hours of stupid takes.
Exactly. Yeah. Got to break up the monotony from time to time.
And then 1 hour of talking about dips. And
exactly.
About which dip is better.
So I was thinking about this. We've had 4 days now to let this digest and kind of, you know, get the initial reaction and rage and vitriol out of our bodies, especially Titans fans, from what transpired on Thursday Night Football and really for the last 2 weeks. So let's take a step back and let's do kind of a state of the franchise assessment on the Titans with three people right now: the head coach, the quarterback, and the GM. You know, Friday on the show, I said I'm all but done with the quarterback. I feel like I'm kind of 50-50 on the GM, hit or miss, you know, nice move here, questionable move there. I don't really have many doubts. I think there's some minor issues with Vrabel, but I don't really have many issues or bones to pick with Vrabel. So where are we at right now with the three most important figures?
In
light of what we've had as a 1-2 season so far.
I personally view them in very different spectrums. I think Marcus Mariota's spectrum, the quarterback spectrum, is the shortest spectrum to look at. You're looking at this week, next week, this season, you're sort of viewing it through a more narrow lens. It's about what are you doing today, right? Mark Vrabel is viewed in a little bit larger lens. It's more about a 2 or 3 year window. And with John Robinson, it's even larger than that. I think it's more of a 5 or 6 year window that you have to evaluate these guys on, maybe a little smaller than that. So I don't really view them all like week to week. I don't think you view a GM week to week. It's hard because once he's constructed the team, you sort of view them just in the offseason more so than you do. Maybe around the trade deadline you can evaluate them. The coach is kind of more week to week. I think the last 2 weeks I've raised concerns about Mike Vrabel's decision making. There's been a couple of decisions where I just, you know, it just baffled my mind. And the quarterback's the quarterback. He's an average quarterback in the NFL who has quarters where he's bad and quarters where he's great. And, you know, is that worth $22, $25, $28 million a year? Probably not. But what else are you going to do? You know, so I still think I'm in wait and see mode on all of it because it's only 3 games and we got a long season to go.
I mean, the quarterback, he is what he is. You know, he's a okay quarterback. He's a good quarterback, I guess. He's not bad.
Not great.
Not great, and that's the problem. You know, he needs to be great. They want him to be great. The fans want him to be great. And he's just, okay. You know, he's good. Can we do worse? Yeah. Can we do better? Yeah. But, I mean, for the time being, he's okay. I mean, he's going to win some games and he's going to lose some games. He's going to get injured. So, I mean, I think people pretty much, you know, whether they like him or not, they pretty much know what they got in Marcus. The head coach, has he made some decisions that are head scratchers? Yes, but I think for the most part, he's this team is slowly taking on his identity, especially on defense. I know they are. Offensively, they're slowly taking on his identity. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because in this day and age, you got to have somebody that thinks about offense, you know, 2-3 steps ahead of the defense, a guy that's innovative. So, you know, you got an offensive coordinator and a head coach, I think, that are similar in what their approach and what they want. I think that's why he hired him, because they think alike and he wanted the same system. I don't think he and LaFleur thought alike. I don't think they bumped heads neither, but I think they had two different philosophies how they wanted the offense to run. Now, the GM, as much as I like John Robinson, I think if this Marcus thing doesn't work out, this Jack Conklin thing doesn't work out, he's already had Dodd that was a dud. He had some other guys that were duds in his draft. Now he's had Kevin Byard. He's had some guys that have been hits.
Jayon Brown.
But, you know, if these other guys that he drafted, the Nate Davises, if they don't pan out, you know, the way that we thought they were or should, then that's going to be a big blemish on his record. I mean, a huge blemish. So you want to see if Jack Conklin is re-signed. You want to see if these other guys that he drafted, can they keep Derrick Henry? Because you can draft these guys, but if you don't keep them, that is a testament to who you are as a GM. Because if you draft these guys and they're good, you keep them. You find a way to keep them. That's what good GMs do. They keep the guys that they draft. They build the team with the guys that they drafted, and they keep them past their first contract. If every guy that you get leaves after their first contract just about, then that's not being a good GM.
So far, he's re-signed Lawan.
Yeah, he's re-signed Lawan.
He's re-signed
Byard. No, but Taylor wasn't his.
I didn't say he drafted him. I said he re-signed him. He re-signed Taylor, which is the first new deal for his contract, because he was in charge for the majority of Taylor's first contract. He's re-signed Kevin Byard, and he's re-signed, again, didn't draft Jarrell Casey, but given Jarrell Casey the extension. So those are probably the three best players on the team. He's taking care of them. If Derrick Henry's asking for $17 million, I don't fault John Robinson for saying, see ya. Take it easy, dude.
But Derrick Henry's not going to ask for $17
million. I'm just saying there is a drop-off point where it's smarter for the GM to let a player walk than to invest too much, which is, again, I think to your point about Conklin, he decided, or him and the power structure decided, not to pick up the fifth-year option because it was going to cost them so much for a right tackle, which puts him in one of two situations. Either he's going to re-sign him for probably a pretty large contract, and it's one of his guys, and we all view it as, okay, he's good enough to re-sign and pay him $14 million to play right tackle, which is a ton of money. Or you're going to let him walk and say, listen, we got a guy with a bum knee who's been hurt twice. He's been good 2 years, but he's also been hurt, and we can't afford, because he's really a guard and we're not going to pay him like a tackle. We have to be shrewd about this and let him go. Fans are going to be torn on that decision. Half the fans are going to say that's the smart decision. Half the fans are going to say it's not. It almost depends on what Jack Conklin goes on to do somewhere else, or Derrick Henry. Like, GMs, to truly evaluate draft classes and free agents, you have to take so much time. Like, you have to, like, Sylvester Williams was a dud. Benny Logan was a dud of a signing. He signed, like, his first class of signings was Rashard Matthews and Ben Jones, and those guys turned out to be solid and then not as solid. You know, he drafted Rashawn Evans and Harold Landry with both. They both look like they're the real deal at those two positions. Adoree Jackson and Corey Davis are still kind of in this questionable territory.
Adoree Jackson, Corey Davis, Taywan Taylor. So, their first three picks haven't panned out. One is gone. The other is what are you, Adoree Jackson? And then Corey Davis, yes, he has shown flashes, but we haven't seen any of them this year.
And Jonnu was the fourth pick in that draft.
Jonnu,
he's shown some flashes of being
Brown,
pretty good.
Corey Levine's not here. Josh Caraway's not here. Brad Seaton's and Khalif Muhammad. You had other guys. You had basically...
Well, the first five picks of the draft, though, were on the team outside of Taylor.
The first five picks... Taylor wasn't even in that draft class of 17. The first five picks...
I thought you were talking about Jayon Taylor.
No. Jayon Brown is a good player. Jonnu Smith, we're still figuring out, but I think he's going to be a good player. Taywan Taylor, gone. Adoree Jackson, the kid, I mean, he's... I don't know what's wrong with him, but I'm... I'm off of that Adoree Jackson train because he hadn't proven consistently he's the guy that I thought he was going to be coming out of SC.
Well, he should never go back to return a punt ever
Corey
again.
Davis.
Well, and they're still going to use him as punt returner, which they said
Corey
yesterday.
Davis.
Did they confirm that?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Now they're going to work Adam Humphries in. Now,
and then
now,
Corey Davis is like, yes, he's shown flashes. I think he needs a bona fide number one on the side of him. If he gets that, then Corey Davis will be a much better player.
I think, and then number one on John Robinson's resume is Mike Vrabel. I mean, he hired Mike Vrabel. Like he was in charge of the move to go from Mularkey to Vrabel. So how that works, you know, that's still, I think, number one. Now, number two might be how does he handle the quarterback situation? What is his end result, and what does that net the franchise? If it's a trade for Marcus, is it franchise tag? Is it letting him walk? Is it re-signing him? There's a lot of options. What he does with that player and with the head coach, I think, are probably the two most the biggest two bullet points on his resume. But if you look at free agent signings, some have been very good, some have been not so good. And right now, Saffold and Humphries are making $80 million and are not producing a ton right now. So, again, it's also three games into 2 4-year contracts. We've got to see how it works and see what it looks like for much longer. I still think there's a lot of reasons to be positive about John Robinson. If you ask Floyd Reese, if you hit on 7 out of 10 draft picks, you've been a great GM. Like, you're not supposed to hit on, like, the great GMs don't hit on 10 out of every 10 draft picks.
No, of course not.
You hit on 6 or 7 out of 10, and I think his ratio is probably in that range. The problem is you can't miss on first and second rounders. If you continue to miss on first and second rounders, that's a concern. And your big-ticket free agents. If you're missing on big-ticket free agents and first and second rounders, that's kind of the two most important ways you can improve the team. Vrabel has to prove to me that the last two, like I still think Vrabel's achieved a lot against a lot of adversity in year one. He proved a lot to me. I think he was the right guy for the job. Game one against Cleveland, clearly they had his team ready to go, and they executed the game plan. You know, the clock management in game two and the going for it and not challenging versus challenging, like those decisions in the last two games have been questionable for Vrabel. So I'm not changing my opinion of him, but those are definitely questionable decisions.
All right, Titans fans, let's hear from you. Let's open up the phone. 615-737-1025 is the number. 737-1025, the number. You've had about 4 days to cool off from that game. Let's do a little state of the franchise. You assess the quarterback, the head coach, the general manager, all three, two of the three, just one you want to focus in on. 737-1025, the number. We're back after this on Morning Drive.
You know what you should be focusing in on right now, man? And that is my voice. I can hypnotize you too, but my voice. And I want to hypnotize you to go to Cool Springs MD. Because you know what? If it can help me, a guy that played 15 years in the NFL, it can help you, a guy that for the last 15 years has just been working out, enjoying life with the wife or the girlfriend and the kids or whatnot. That's what you've been doing. And if you feel now at your age, whatever age that is, that you feel a little worn down, a little tired, then you know what you can do, like I did. Go see the cool people at Cool Springs MD, Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, and his wife Daphne, along with that experienced staff, give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. Cool Springs MD services have already helped many men of the Brentwood, Nashville, Franklin, because I'm in Franklin, and surrounding areas in Tennessee with improving their immune systems. That was just me, you know, ad-libbing a little bit. Energy levels. My energy levels are high. Can't y'all tell when I'm on a station early in the morning? My energy levels are on fleek, as the young kids say. That means on high. Up there, you know, just out there.
I've never heard of that either.
Never heard. Gosh, here we go. We got.
Surprised they didn't put ER at the end of it.
We got to screw them on that. Cognitive functions and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy, enriched life. And there's no better time to achieve a healthy lifestyle than now. What are you waiting on, man? Give Cool Springs MD a call and make an appointment. Here's the number. Write it down. Or you know what? If you already have it in your smartphone, pull it out, hit that dial button, and make an appointment. Here it is. 615 for all you newbies. 615-660-6900. 615-660-6900. Or visit their website, because mama will love you after you visit and go. Here's the website, coolspringsmd.com.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, NFL fans, Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show. Start your morning off with a kickoff from 7 to 9:30 a.m. That'll lead you into NFL pregame live from the George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders. It is all brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, your Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. Let's get some of your Titans calls, 615-737-1025. We welcome in Raymond, who's up next on Morning Drive. What's up, Raymond?
Oh, not much. Good morning, fellas.
What's happening?
Hey, I've already made up my decision on Marcus. I just don't think he's the guy. I mean, he is a great guy, and he would be a great backup to somebody, I believe. But I don't think he's a starting quarterback. But Vrabel, I don't think we've seen enough of him to really make up, you know, a decision definitively yes or no. But Robinson's the one I've really had the problem with here recently. It just seems like either his first-round draft picks, he's either drafting them and they're hurt, or they're just really fragile right off the bat. Corey Davis, we really didn't see the first year until the playoffs. Evans, we didn't see until about the Thursday night football game last year in Jacksonville. And this year, you know, we got a defensive lineman that we may not even see at all. So, you know, why didn't we get somebody that was like an offensive lineman where we had a ton of problem last year that could come in and play right away?
But here's the thing, though, Raymond, appreciate the call on the Jeffrey Simmons thing. Yeah. He's going to recover.
You know what you're getting out of that.
These injuries, you know, you return to form, and he is by far the best available at that spot. I mean, you said it. If he was healthy.
Top five player.
Yeah, he's a top elite player. Yeah.
Now, again, there's a lot of ifs in that, in what you just said, right? Conklin is fascinating from an evaluation standpoint for John Robinson, because do you fault a general manager for a player getting hurt? Like, he was an all-pro as a rookie, so you have to give him credit for drafting that guy. And then pretty, not as good, but pretty good in his second season. Not great. And then tears an ACL. Like, is that the general manager's fault? Like, Floyd has talked about this with Jared a lot. And Floyd's like, no, if you draft an all-pro tackle in the first round, you did a good job evaluating a player. If he gets hurt and tears an ACL at the end of his second season in the playoffs, that's not the general manager's fault. So that one's hard to evaluate, because it's almost based on what Jack Conklin goes on to do. If John Robinson decides to cut bait on him and he's not a part of this team, but he goes on to have a great 10-year career somewhere else, then that was probably a bad decision by John Robinson. If he goes on to have a 3-year career somewhere else and flames out of the league, then it's probably the smart decision by John Robinson to move on. So, you know, I think a lot of Jack Conklin still kind of is tied to what they decide to do with him moving forward.
Well, I mean, either way, if he's not here, or if it doesn't pan out, or if he goes somewhere else and flourishes, meaning Jack Conklin, it sits bad on John Robinson. People will say, well, why did you let him get out? You know, if he was that type of player, or if he doesn't produce and it's not the player, then they say, well, you wasted a first round pick on a guy that didn't produce. And you could have got someone else. So John's in a,
but he was an all pro,
but John's in a no win situation right here. The only way he wins is if they re-sign Conklin, and Conklin is a good player. He doesn't even have to be a Pro Bowl player or all pro player, but a good player, a staple at that position, because that's what they've had over the last two decades. It's staples at the tackle position. And if they can't keep Jack Conklin, then they have to go out and try to find another right tackle and it might be a rookie, or it might be a free agent.
Might be Dennis Kelly.
I don't trust free agent tackles. I just don't, because, you know, unless he wanted a lot of money, then you're getting a tackle that's like at the end of his, that's already reached his peak and is more so on the decline.
Well, the Redskins last night with Donald Penn, the former Pro Bowler with the Raiders.
Exactly.
Who's now filling in for Trent Williams, who's sitting out.
Exactly.
Well, and Conklin's in a very different stage in his career. But
yeah, he's young, and, you know, he's coming back from an injury.
What if he signs him, though? Because he's going to want elite level money. That's why
what he wants to, and what the market will tell you he gets is two different things.
Sure.
You can want what you want.
But if you pay him $14 million a year, you can't get an average player for the next 5 years. If you're going to pay him $14 million a year, he needs to be an elite player.
He's not going to get 14 a year. I don't think many teams are going to pay him $14 million. Yes, unless he has that all-pro season this season. Now, if he has an all-pro season this season, then, yeah, if I'm John, I'm paying him the $14 million because now I protected whoever my quarterback's going to be. I protect him for the next 8 years with Taylor and Jack. But if he doesn't go back to Pro Bowl, all-pro form, then you can say what you want. He's not getting $14 million. The mark. I love how.
I don't think he's worth that money.
Ozzie Newsome used to do it. Ozzie Newsome would let guys go test the market. Even the big guys, let them go test the market. He did that with Ray Lewis toward the end of his. Go test.
Patriots do the same thing.
See what the market says.
Go on, Dante Hightower.
And then come back. Because I am not going to overpay for you. I'm going to see what the market says for you. And if the market says I should pay you $12 million, then okay, I'm gonna give you I'm gonna try to give you the best deal. But I'm not gonna set the market at 15 and everybody else wanna pay you 12. I'm just not doing that. And I think that's where John Robinson is. I think that's where we can say, you know what? He does a good job with that. Because I don't think he overpaid for Taylor Lewan. I think he paid him right and he's getting what he paid for. Other than him being suspended the first four games.
Outside of that.
He paid Kevin Byer the right amount of money, and he's getting that from him. Jarrell Casey, Delanie Walker, he's been smart about how he's divvied out the money.
Yeah, and I agree with that. That's what makes Conklin such a hard thing to really evaluate because, again, he was an all-pro lineman on one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. That John Robinson gets credit for that. But you also don't take away credit for a torn ACL. Like, that's not his fault. That's not the GM's fault that a player just incurs a random injury at the end of his second season and it hurts him. So if their medical team thinks that Jack Conklin's knee is hurt. Now, to the caller's point about all the players, like the soft tissue injury with Corey Davis, with Rashawn Evans, I mean, it's unfortunate. Neither one of those guys were, you know, Corey Davis was banged up when they drafted him. I don't remember Rashawn Evans being banged up when they drafted him. Almost everybody viewed Rashawn Evans as a steal. That's why they moved up a couple of spots in the first round to get him.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously now a stud of a player. Again, if you're a Titans fan, you have to view John Robinson through a very long window and say, what does this team look like over a 5, 6, 7 year window? And right now, Rashawn Evans, Harold Landry, Corey Davis, Jack Conklin for the most part, Jayon Brown, Kevin Byard, like the core nucleus of this team, the young players, have been John Robinson selections or free agents. Logan Ryan, Malcolm Butler, some of those guys have worked out. Those two guys, for example, have worked out. Wesley Woodyard was a phenomenal addition to this team. So there's also been some, you know, Adoree Jackson was good and then not as good. Right now, Adam Humphries and $80 million into Adam Humphries and Roger Saffold doesn't look like a smart decision right now.
No.
But let's find out what it looks like at the end of the year.
615-737-1025, the number. Hey, Smashville, you can join the game Nashville at the second annual Preds Fest on this upcoming Sunday, September the 29th from 2 to 6 p.m. There's going to be Preds player appearances, live entertainment, a used equipment sale, and fun for the whole family. Stop by the tent and win some awesome prizes and ESPN 1025, the game gear. We're going to transition and shift gears to a little college football. Wes Rucker, Go Vols 24/7, will join us in about 20 minutes. But one thing that I want to do, a little exercise here when we come back, about one assertion that we had back in July at SEC Media Days regarding the quarterbacks in this conference. That's coming up next here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Our buddy Wes Rucker, Go Vols 24/7, will join us coming up in just about 15 minutes. But let's get a little college football discussion in here, because one of the things that we discussed back in July at Media Days was the resurgence of the quarterback position in this conference, maybe dating back to the Manziel, Mettenberger, McCarron, Murray days of 2013, 2012, and how good the quarterback play was in this conference. And I'm watching the games over the weekend, and yeah, Tua has been as advertised. Jake Fromm is clearly better than I think virtually everybody ever believed, except for Derek Mason, who has a picture of him above his bed at night that he looks at before he goes to sleep.
Wait, did you say Jake Fromm or did you say
Joe Burrow?
Joe Burrow.
Good night, Joe.
You call him you and him are like a
JB. I call JB. Him JB.
Do you do one of those A-Rod where you like lean up against the wall, give him a little smooch, and then go to bed right on the poster?
Say good night, JB.
Good night, Burrows. See you in November. And Jake Fromm is, you know, I think maybe statistically a little bit down, but it's probably because of the competition they've played. And
6 touchdowns, no interceptions, undefeated.
Right, and there was a game. Was there a game where he threw 9 passes? Or was that Trevor Lawrence?
That was Trevor Lawrence.
Okay. Yeah. Trevor Lawrence this weekend was 7 of 9 for 94 yards and 2 touchdowns, no picks, and then was out of there.
All right.
They might be able to win every game on their schedule with Chase Price at quarterback. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah. No, they probably could.
Yeah.
Bo Nix has certainly broke on the scene here and has Auburn fans believing. But I'm wondering, if do you guys still believe top to bottom that this quarterback class in this conference is what we thought it was 2 months ago?
It's not what we thought it was, but it's still better than that group in 2012 and 2013, because you can't just gloss over three Heisman candidates. I mean, you can't. Jake Fromm, Tua, and Burrow is better than probably any of those guys from those years that we're talking about in 2012 and 2013. It's also hard to evaluate because three of the starting quarterbacks are out for the year. Although Jerick Garantano is done for the year. Jerick Garantano is now playing for the Vols. Felipe Franks, Terry Wilson, and Jake Bentley, all three guys who were upper-class starters who'd started a lot of games, all of those guys are out for the year. So it's hard to evaluate, but Ryan Helinski, Sawyer Smith, and Kyle Trask have filled in admirably as backups. I think all three of those guys are okay. Vanderbilt's quarterback situation is a question. There's no doubt about that. Matt Corral for Ole Miss has not been as advertised, but he's only a freshman. Tommy Stevens at Mississippi State was really good, but got hurt. But they're sitting there at 3-1. Kelly Bryant is still really, really good at Missouri. Mm-hmm. Their offense is really salty. Kellen Mond is the one that sort of sticks out. He has regressed. Mm. Like Jerick Garantano has regressed. Those are the only two guys I would look at that are still playing from last year that have truly regressed from last year. So it's not as good as we expected, but I still think it's the best in college football, and I still think it's better than 2012 or 13.
Pre-injury, Felipe Franks in the regression category?
No, I think he was about the same. Okay. I mean, not great, but definitely the leader on that team. He wasn't great against Miami, but not like Jerick Garantano has regressed. And Kellen Mond has played two really elite-level defenses. Let's give him credit. Clemson and Auburn are two of the best defenses in America.
Kellen Mond?
I think he's regressed. I think Felipe Franks, you can see that he still, they were going, Franks was a guy that I think he still was making mistakes. He played bad against Miami and Florida, even though they won. He was a little bit erratic. Were they going to make a quarterback change? No. But the Felipe Franks you saw last season and toward the end wasn't the Felipe Franks that you saw at the beginning. You would have thought that based upon what you saw last year, it would be much better this year. And it just wasn't. Now, was he bad? No. But he sure enough wasn't what I thought he was going to be to start the season off. Bonehead, it was just plays that he made, especially in the Miami and Florida game.
But he also made the biggest play of the game, though, too.
He did, but it still doesn't take away a guy that's been in that system for the last two or three years. You're making these mistakes that a freshman's making.
But we can't we can't talk about Franks anymore.
He's done for the season. It's unfortunate, but he's done, and they might just be a better team with Trask at quarterback.
I don't think they're going to miss a beat with Trask.
I think they are better against teams they should beat.
Yeah.
Because he's not what Dan Mullen wants, which is a mobile athlete. He wants to be able to – part of Dan Mullen's offense is built around Franks' ability to move, and Emory Jones does that. It's why he messed around and brought in Emory Jones when Kyle Trask was going up and down the field on Tennessee. They brought in Emory Jones, and they had to punt. And it was like, what are you doing? Like, Kyle Trask is moving – when they play against teams like Tennessee that they should beat easily, Kyle Trask is going to be more than enough.
This week, Florida gets Towson this week, so he'll light it up. Mm-hmm. Then the next 2 weeks, Florida has Auburn and LSU back-to-back.
Mm. Yikes.
That's going to be tough. That's going to be tough on a young quarterback.
Those are two defenses that are not
easy. Not young meaning in age, but just young.
And then 2 weeks later, they get Georgia. So in a three-week stretch, they play the third-rated team, the fourth-rated team, and the seventh-rated team.
Yeah, but I think from top to bottom, there have been some guys on the bottom end that we thought were going to be okay. They just hadn't panned out. Wilson is injured, so we don't know what he would have been at Kentucky.
He was really good in week one.
Yeah.
Looked like a better player, but then, how do you know? Because he gets injured.
But I think the top half of the quarterbacks, the Fromms, the Tuas, the Burrows, those guys, the kid out of Missouri.
Kelly Bryant.
Those guys have played the way we thought they would play. It's the other quarterbacks that have kind of not looked the way we thought they would look. Garantano, we thought he would look better, and he just hadn't. So, you know, I mean, yes, the SEC has probably four of the top, 10 quarterbacks in the country right now.
I'm not sure I'd go top 10, but yeah.
Top 15?
Yeah, I mean, Tua is one or two in the country. Burrow might be your Heisman frontrunner right now, and Fromm is no worse than top five. So you have three of the top five or six right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would put Kelly Bryant probably in that 12 to 15 range. I think, you know, he's not as good as Justin Fields or Jalen Hurts or, you know, Trevor Lawrence, some of these other guys.
Wins games, though.
Yeah, but he wins games. And so, you know, unless you play at Wyoming, I guess.
You look at the 3-1. You look at that. It just doesn't make sense.
Schedule that game. I blame the administration. I blame the Missouri administration. Why are you scheduling week one in Laramie, Wyoming?
I just don't know how they lost the game, though.
It's week one in Laramie, Wyoming. Like, weird. Have you ever been to Laramie, Wyoming? Weird.
No, I don't ever want to go, honestly.
Weird things happen. It's a beautiful place, but weird things happen in those kind of games, right? When it's game one of the season, you're on the road, you know, halfway across the world in the middle of nowhere, Wyoming. Like, it's just a weird game, and I blame the administration for playing that game because they have been dominant ever since. Like, they just defensively, they were awesome against South Carolina. They destroyed West Virginia. Like, they have been a very good team. They look like the second or third best team in the East, if you don't count the Wyoming game.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Bryant, just listen, he got 1,000 yards passing, 8 touchdowns already. So it's not, and that doesn't include his rushing statistics. So I think Kelly Bryant's right there at 4. But to your point, like, you know, Jarek Garantano, Kellen Mond, you know, Jake Bentley's injured.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys haven't been as good. Burrow has been significantly better.
Yes.
So I think it's 6-1, half a dozen to the other. I still think it's the best league for quarterbacks of any conference. You look around, and the Big 12 has got some really nice players. But you look around each conference and you go, who's better than Tua, Burrow, Fromm, Bryant at the top? Like, who's got a foursome better than that?
Well, the Big 10 maybe with Settler and – is it Settler?
Sindelar.
Sindelar and then Fields.
Fields would be number one on the list. Sean Clifford has had his moments for Penn State. He's going to be a really good player. He's not right now. He's
Shea
young
Patterson
right now.
Has been just a disaster.
Shea Patterson is the Kellen Mond of the Big 10. He was trending upward, had a really good season, broke through, and has regressed this year. I think it's the offensive coordinator's fault. I think Josh Gattis is the reason there. Jack Cohn for Wisconsin's
been better.
How about
Martinez?
I think Adrian Martinez is a stud.
Uh-huh.
I think he's a stud. So
they get Ohio State this week at home.
And game day is going to be there. In the ACC, it's basically, you know, Trevor Lawrence, Bryce Perkins at Virginia, who's really good, Tommy DeVito at Syracuse. Wake Forest puts up a ton of points, but they're Wake Forest. You know, it doesn't mean a whole lot. The Big 12 has Hurts and Ellinger, which is really, really good. And then after that, you're going, who's the next best? Brock Purdy at Iowa State's pretty good. You know, Spencer Sanders at Oklahoma State's putting up a bunch of numbers.
That kid throws the ball around the yard.
Yeah, I mean, like, their offense is so much. If you want to watch a fun offense and just be a nerd, go watch Oklahoma State. So they hired Princeton's offensive coordinator, Sean Gleason, and he runs this, you know, two tight end spread. It's really fascinating to watch. Watch Oklahoma State. They almost beat Texas this past weekend.
Yeah.
But I think it's still clearly the SEC. So it's not as good, maybe, but it's still the best in the country.
All right, for the next 30 minutes, we have a 24/7 sports double dip. In 20 minutes, we'll talk with Chad Bishop of Vandy. But up next, we'll talk to our buddy Wes Rucker, who covers the Vols for Go Vols 24/7. That's next here on Morning Drive on Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nikhail Braden-Gall, Derek Mason with you here on this Tuesday edition of the show. Let's get a little college football talk going. We send it up to Knoxville. Welcome in our buddy Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7. Wes, happy Tuesday. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. How y'all doing today?
We're doing excellent. So let's kind of get into this team from the standpoint of the first thing I want to get to is Jim Chaney. Yesterday, we spent a good duration of our show because the Titans played Thursday night, so we were really focused on the Vols yesterday. And I'm just blown away by what was the thought process behind Tennessee, Philip Fulmer, Jeremy Pruitt, backing up the Brinks truck for a guy like Jim Chaney and giving him $1.5 or $1.6 million a year. Through 3-4 weeks, I watched this guy, and I'm just not enamored with his play calling.
Yeah, you know, I think that you look at Jim Cheney's body of work over time, and it's pretty solid. You know, I think that there's certainly some issues right now. I don't know how much of it specifically relates to him. I mean, he's the offensive coordinator, so when the offense struggles, he's going to take a lot of blame for it, and I think that's fair when you pay someone that much money and they don't produce. I mean, it's certainly fair to question that. I just, when I go back and watch some of that film, I think he's actually called some pretty good stuff, and it just hasn't been executed. Now, if they're not taking whatever they've got from the practice field to the game field, that's also not a good thing. There's certainly an issue there. I just don't know that I've covered the guy before. I know what people in the business think of him. I find it hard to believe that the guy just, you know, got dumb when he came back to Knoxville. I think there's some other issues there they're trying to iron out.
Well, and I don't think there's a ton of upside with him either. I think there's not a lot of the floor is very high for him, but I think their ceiling is fairly low, and I think that was always the concern, is that it's a conservative hire to some degree. But it played out in a bizarre way, and it took a long time, and I think he was a good hire at the time. What are the other things you're talking about that they've got to iron out? Because they did throw the freshman out there, so it seems like it's still Jarrett Garantano's job for 2 weeks. What are the other things that they need to iron out, in your opinion, to get better on offense?
I think that they feel like they're going into games, I think, with some pretty good stuff. It's just, you know, they're having that kind of age-old problem of whatever they're doing on the practice field, it's not translating to games. Now, I don't know if that's the yips from some players. I don't know if that's, you know, maybe there's too many options for them to think about on some of these plays, so they're kind of getting that whole paralysis by analysis thing. I don't know what it is, but I know that they feel like when they go into games, they've gone over this stuff pretty well. They've run it several times in practice. They feel pretty good about it. And then they call it in the game, and it's just not executed. So clearly there's some sort of a disconnect there, and I don't know exactly what it is. But if you're not able to take what you practice over to the field, you know, in some way you're either weren't prepared or you're just not capable of performing. So either way, that's not a good thing, but they got to figure out which one of those things it is.
Now, Garantano, you know, he looks very erratic. He doesn't look like the same quarterback we saw last year. We praised him for standing in the pocket, you know, being tough, progressing as a quarterback, but it seems like this year he's sort of taken a step or two backwards. And maybe it's because of the new system that they employed, and he's still trying to get used to it. But if you look at what they're doing on offense and who they have on offense, they have two really good receivers, but their running backs are – they have two guys that are averaging over 4 yards a carry, Chandler and Gray. Do you think they – based upon that – and I know they have the two wide receivers on the outside, but they just lean so heavy on the run game, because that's been one positive for the UT football team.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, you said they got two good receivers. I think when you look at it, I think they've got three. I mm-hmm. think Palmer is a guy who would make big plays in a lot of other offenses. I mean, he was one of the nation's leaders in yards per catches last year. They're just not getting him enough touches. And I think Wood Anderson's a pretty good tight end who just, you know, they've just, for whatever reason, not been able to get the ball to him during games. And I think he's been open a decent bit, and they just, you know, the ball hadn't gotten out on time, or it's been overthrown or underthrown. But I think Gray and Chandler are two of the better players they've got on offense. And I think they're going into these games, I think they're trying to game plan this to where they've got some balance, I think, so they're not putting too much on Garantano. And then they end up getting, you know, maybe behind, or I know Georgia State that game, they were shocked they were behind, so they had to start chasing the game. Against Florida, they got behind, so they had to start chasing the game. And that really kind of throws you off balance when you do that. You know, that kind of makes you do some things you didn't necessarily want to do, but you feel like you have to do them to get back in the game. So, yeah, I mean, I think going back and looking at it, I think they do have more chances to run the ball, and they're not doing it. So the question is, why are they not doing that? And they're going to have to answer that, because they do have those backs, and I think they need to figure out a way to get the ball more to them. Of course, in the game at Florida, they called some pretty simple swing passes to get the ball to Chandler in space, and Garantano a couple times just didn't get the throw right. I mean, it's a swing pass throw. It's one of the simpler ones in the game, and he had a hard time kind of connecting on them. So their issues right now with the quarterback position are going pretty deep.
We're chatting with Wes Rucker, Go Vols 24/7, joining us here on Morning Drive. So, Wes, the bye week this week, and then you get Georgia at home in 2 weeks. Last year on the road at Sanford Stadium, we saw Tennessee kind of hang around into the third quarter. I think it was like a 13 or a 16-point game, and, you know, they were within striking distance. What do they need to do this time around at home to not only, I guess, replicate the way they were technically in the game a year ago, but to get it to the fourth quarter and make this for a chance for the possible upset?
I mean, maybe they got to pray a lot. I don't really know, guys. I mean, you know, they got to figure out something. You know, clearly they're going to have to either try to manage the game as best they can, or they're going to have to kind of throw caution to the wind and just go at them and try to make throw some early haymakers, some trick plays. I don't know what, but they've got to figure out one of those two things probably. I think that what they – last year, if you look at that team, they were able to come back after that bye week and they played Auburn. And that was, you know, the best game they've played relative to the opponent is in Pruitt's kind of year and a half or whatever with the team. They got better during that bye week. This time they're going to have to do the same thing. They're going to have to get a lot of things right during this bye week, and they're going to have to kind of figure out. I think there's some younger guys. They're just going to have to get ready as much as they can because right now some of the veterans are just not getting the job done. And they say insanity's kind of, you know, doing the same thing over and expecting a different result. They're going to have to go to some of these younger guys. And I think they're probably going to do that to some extent. I think that's probably going to kind of upset the apple cart with some of these veterans. I think some of them might be unhappy enough to even leave the program. I mean, I think this is going to be a really big week for them because, you know, after four games, you can go into the transfer portal or whatever. You can shut it down. You can still get the red shirt. And so it's almost like a third signing period now starts after the fourth game of the season. Between the fourth and fifth games. So I think you're going to see some possibly even some personnel movement this week. So this is going to be a big week for them, and they got to figure out kind of who's on the bus and who isn't, and they got to figure out where they're going with this thing because you're at a point now where you're 1-3. This is the second year of a 10-year. There's going to be some frustration there, and they're going to have to get that sorted out behind the scenes because they need to go forward with the guys they know are with them.
You know, Butch Jones went 0-8, and it was the worst season in Tennessee history, the only time they'd ever gone 4-8 as a program. What happens if they go 3-9? Because the wins are not necessarily obvious on the schedule. What does the offseason feel like and sound like in Knoxville if they're 3-9 or 4-8 this year?
I think there's going to be a lot of, frustration, a lot of angst. There's going to be a lot more hot seat talk. There's going to be a lot more pressure. You know, this is just kind of a vice grip that kind of tightens in this place. And I think that what's good is that they're not still used, you know, they're not used to losing here. They've not accepted losing here. And you could say to a certain extent that feels like denial, but I would argue the exact opposite of that. I think they have a standard here, and they're not willing to sacrifice it. They're not willing to change that. So I do think people knew when this guy got here that what he was taking over for, there were going to be some issues in kind of rebuilding that. But I think that people will be understanding to a certain level. But, you know, this is the University of Tennessee. You know, if you throw up a 3-9 or, gosh, a 2-10, whatever it possibly could be, you know, you're going to have some people upset. And they should be. So there's some things they're going to have to get sorted out and sorted out pretty quickly because I don't think they're going to make a move this year. I just don't think they're in a financial position to do that, and I don't think that's the right thing to do. In fact, I think it would be kind of crazy, and I think they know that. because they don't want to pay three head coaches at the same time. So they have to kind of give this guy a chance to start building this thing, or else they're just kind of doing the same things they've done over and over and over and over again for the past 12 years, and that's got them nowhere. So they're going to have to just kind of get a stiff upper lip and deal with this. But you're right. I mean, if it's a 3-9, you know, 2-10, something like that, it's going to be a pretty nasty offseason around here.
Wes, we appreciate you stopping by this morning. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, no problem. Anytime, guys. Happy
you got
to
it. Wes Rucker, Go Vols 24/7, covers the Tennessee Volunteers. Coming up next, we'll stay with the 24/7 theme. Chad Bishop from Vanderbilt will join us on the other side. We'll get to the Commodores, who are actually a favorite this week, as finally a little break in the schedule. Georgia, Purdue, LSU, maybe a win for Coach Derek Mason. We're back after this on Morning Drive.
What's up, Oos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Lowe's has the brands pros trust to get the job done. You can now shop new Catalyst fencing solutions and save big when you do. 10% off when you buy in bulk. Plus, save $180 on a DeWalt 12-inch dual bevel sliding compound miter saw. Now just $449. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 5/6 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.